Our next case is 2017-1494, Automated Tracking Solutions versus the Coca-Cola Company. Mr. Is it Sokol?
Sokol.
Please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Pleases the court. This court should reverse the district court for two reasons. First, the claims are not directed for an abstract idea, and they recite an inventive concept. Second, the district court improperly resolved factual disputes in Coca-Cola's favor in violation of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 12C.
What I think you take the position that RFI technology was nascent at the time of the invention. Am I correct in understanding that?
That is true, Your Honor. And if we take a step back and look at where the technology was. There are essentially an admission that RFID did exist, but beyond that, most of the readers at the time, RFID readers, were dumb readers. What they did was they acted very similarly to barcode. They read transponders.
Where is all of that in the record?
Okay. So, Your Honor, what we argued in the record is that none of this was conventional, and part of the problem here is that the procedure of this, the posture of this case is 12C. And we were looking at only the pleadings and the patent itself.
So where is it in the patent itself and in the pleadings where, at a minimum, it's stated that it's not conventional?
What the patent says, if we go back to the patent itself, so if we look at column 2, which is appendix 52, for example, column 2, line 45, what we'll see here is the present invention achieves the aforementioned exemplary aspects by employing radio frequency identification RFID technology, computer programming, and database applications, network technologies, and hardware elements for locating, identifying, tracking, and surveillance of objects. The key there is that the RFID technology itself was nascent, was already known, but
what do you mean? What about in column 3? I'm sorry.
For no, please go right ahead.
What about in column 3, lines 5 through 6?
Yes, Your Honor. So what we're talking about here is that RFID technology, readers, transponders, antennas for reading, were known. But what Dr. Sawyer did is he went beyond that.
Did you have additional evidence to present on RFID tech that you were unable to present before the ruling?
Yes, Your Honor. What we would hope to present if this
what was it?
It was that.
Did you make a pro offer?
Excuse me, Your Honor.
Did you make a pro offer of that evidence?
We argued that the technology claimed was not conventional, and that on the pleadings we were precluded from providing evidence. In fact, we even asked for an oral argument at below, and we were denied that opportunity.
But part of the problem is you argued it, but you don't have that in the pleadings. You had no evidence attached that says that. Your patent doesn't say that. So while whether it's conventional might very well be a fact question, it seems like a fact question to me, whether something is well known to somebody at a particular time in history. But you didn't make an allegation, which if accepted as true, would have preserved your right, because there are no allegations in your pleadings that say that. There's only attorney argument in the brief, and that is not an allegation to be accepted as true.
What about, I'm sorry, go ahead and answer.
I was going to say, one fact that is true is that, for instance, the 766 patent and the 089 patent went through reexamination. And the technology is both novel and non-obvious. And there's nothing in the record by Coca-Cola.
Wait a minute. That can't possibly be the rule of law. Because then what you're telling me is no patent could ever be invalidated under Section 101 of the pleadings because they all were issued.
And you just said, quote, one fact that is true, and that implies you're conceding everything that Judge Moore just said. So I'm accepting that as conceded.
No, Your Honor.
Can I ask you another question? On page A228, you have your amended complaint, and in there you say that Dr. Sawyer developed and integrated new RFID technology. What do you mean by that?
Sure, Your Honor. And importantly, in Koch's brief, page, I believe, 28, they actually quoted this and left out the word new. And I think that's very important.
Okay, but what did you mean by that?
So by new RFID technology, what we meant was we took dumb readers. We took readers that read heads. Dr. Sawyer took that type of technology and then added something very important. It added state information about transponders. And let me explain that for a second. So if we were to put a reader...
What's the particular configuration for RFID technology taught in the claims?
It is a reader with an antenna that has, importantly, a coverage area. And that coverage area, all readers have a coverage range.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And the transponder, when it enters the coverage area, can then be read by the reader. And importantly, what these...
Isn't that the whole point of RFID technology?
It is, except that previously, the state information about the transponders was lost. So getting back to what I was saying earlier is that if we were to put a reader at the front door of this courthouse and marked everyone with a tag, as they entered the courthouse, it would read in the conventional sense, in the conventional prior art, it would have read those tags. But then you would have lost visibility as the individuals went throughout the courthouse.
But part of the problem, you're making a very good point now. You have some dependent claims that talk about sensor location for this invention, but your independent claims don't. So the point you're making now, which I don't want you to abandon because I think it's a good point, is that we did demonstrate some real novelty in the combination of sensors and locations that wasn't present in the prior art because we can track within the building, whereas everything else only stopped at the door and you were here or you weren't here. And in big warehouses, this is useful. But I don't see that, for example, in Claim 49 or in Claim 1 of the 766 patent.
Do you think it's in Claim 49 or in Claim 1?
I do.
What language are you relying on?
Sure, Your Honor. So if we turn to, for instance...
Claim 49 of the 089 would be a good starting place.
Yep.
Because that's one of the ones you said was representative.
Yes. So if we look at Claim 49 of the 089 or Claim 1 of 766, we have a reader and we have an antenna. Antennas have coverage areas. And importantly, and this is explicitly cited in Claim 1 of 766, you can see here an antenna in communication with the reader and having a first coverage area. This is critical. What we're trying to do here is in every single claim, we have detection information, whether it be Claim 49 or Claim 1 in 766. This detection information is the state of the transponder.
Okay, what about Claim 49, which doesn't have that language?
Claim 49 does not explicitly state a first coverage area. However, it does recite a reader and an antenna, and this is inextricably tied to RFID. All antennas have a coverage range.
But if that were true, then your language in Claim 1 of the 766 would be completely irrelevant. If you're telling me the word antenna necessarily inherently has a coverage area, it doesn't have to be present in the claim for everyone to know that, then your language in Claim 1 that you just pointed me to, which is helpful to you, is totally superfluous.
It's not superfluous.
Is that your view?
It's just providing context in Claim 1. Antenna does have a coverage area, and if we were to look at the specification, as Amdocs teaches us to do in these type of contexts, we would see that the technology is inextricably tied to RFID. And importantly, readers have coverage areas.
Do all of your claims require RFID?
They do. They do, Your Honor. And if you look at 49, we have transponder, a reader, antenna,
But why wouldn't Claim 49 read on the thing that just tracks when you come in the door, Claim 49?
Because it does not, Your Honor. What it does, very importantly, is if you look at the recitation wherein the detection information indicates whether the stored known transponder ID has been previously detected. That's the type of detection information, one of the types of detection information that we're looking at. The first time it's come in...
It doesn't tell you where it's located in the building. That just tells you if it was previously detected when you walked in the door.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
I like to track who comes in and out of this building.
And I think there's a difference between Claim 49 and Claim 1 of 766. They're covering different concepts. Claim 49 is covering the concept of whether or not a tag was known to the system previously and whether it was previously detected. That's one aspect of the invention. Claim 1 of 766 covers whether or not, and this is important, the detection information covers whether the first sighting of that tag as it enters the coverage area, whether it's the second sighting in the coverage area, and that's extremely important. Why? That second sighting, because we have two continuous sightings, tells you whether or not the tag is dwelling in the coverage area or has it exited the coverage area because there has been no second sighting. And if you look at the state information for the entire coverage area, that tells you extremely valuable information. And then you can locate, track your transponders. And when you couple these in a bigger system with multiple coverage areas, this is the result.
Can I back away from this for just a second and ask you, in Claim 1 of the 766 patent, what about the invention, what structural aspects of your system might be important for the invention?
Sure. So the Claim 1 is a combination of hardware and software. And the software aspects are spelled out in the processors. So the key there is that the processor is generating this transponder information, the state information of how, when, where a transponder was read by the reader. And by maintaining that information, you maintain visibility of the tag throughout the coverage area and therefore perhaps throughout a facility. That's critical. That was lost in prior systems. All you did was read the tag. By maintaining the state information, you allow the tag to be tracked throughout the coverage area. Now, Your Honors, we believe this case is indistinguishable from Thales, which I learned this morning is how you pronounce that. In that case, you had some inertial sensors that were placed in certain locations, and you had a mathematical algorithm that then gathered the data from the sensors and applied a formula which was based on a different reference frame. And we believe that's analogous to our case here.
Well, in that case, two points working together resulted in the outcome. Point number one was the sensor locations were entirely new and that those new locations were claimed and that was meaningful because it really changed the entire formula that you would historically have used to make these calculations. It was because of changing the location of the sensors or the desire to change the location of the sensors, you had to come up with a whole new way of calculating. I don't see that here in these particularly the broader claims.
Your Honor, we believe, first of all, in Thales, the formula dictated necessarily the location of those sensors. But I think importantly, what the analogy we would like to make is that what they did was they changed the reference frame. And what we've done is also changed a quasi-reference frame. What we've done is...
What is it about the structural components and how they work together that might be different or unconventional? I mean, it sounds as if all that I'm hearing you describe as being the what the invention is directed to is claimed is functional aspects. Is there anything structural, like, for example, the location of the antennas or anything like that?
Not in the independent claims, Your Honor. The improvement over the art was an improvement to the RFID system as a whole. And that can happen through any number of ways. It could be hardware, could be software. This was an improvement that allowed you to have visibility of that tag throughout that coverage area. And it's an important distinction. It's a distinction that differentiates prior systems, significantly differentiates. It's something we've argued below was unconventional. And what Koch has done, particularly at this pleading stage of 12C, is they've assumed a whole host of facts. And those facts were not seen in our favor by the district court. And the two facts below that we can agree to was, number one, RFID was a nascent technology. And second, that inventory control was performed by humans. But those two facts alone should not preclude a full development of the record below so that, that all these arguments be made.
Okay, well,
You make a lot of arguments in favor of eligibility in your briefs, but and I know there's representative claims, but I just wanted to direct your attention for a minute to claims 23 and 24 of the 449 patent. I wanted to know whether any of your eligibility arguments pertain to those two claims, which are method claims.
Which patent, Your
Honor? It's the 449 patent, claims 23 and 24. Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, the claim 23, the last step, which is generating by the processor detection information based on the received transponder data, the detection information comprising first sighting and last sighting of the transponder in the coverage area. And then 23, which talks about is dwelling. Again, I mentioned that earlier. That's critical that what we're looking at.
Why is that? I'm sorry for interrupting.
Sure.
But again, we're talking about eligibility.
Yes.
So, okay, how does this relate to the eligibility arguments you've made?
Yeah. So it is not an abstract idea to tie a system to a real-world physical constraint, which is a coverage area that has a physical dimension. It's something that was not done by humans, could not be done by humans, and by recognizing that the antennas, the RFID antennas, had this coverage area, and then by maintaining the state information about how, where, when a transponder is where it was identified first, that's critical information that can then be used for a whole host of applications. But it is, it, at its very core, these claims are directed to RFID systems. And I think that that's analogous to the inertial sensor system in Thales. I see I'm out of time.
Okay, we'll restore your rebuttal time. Let's hear from opposing counsel, Mr. Pivnik.
Thank you, Your Honors, and good morning. My name is Scott Pivnik from Alston & Berg, representing the Coca-Cola Company. Under Alice Step 1, all four of the patents claim unpatentable subject matter because they claim the abstract idea of locating, identifying, and tracking objects.
Are the antennas readers or the transponder in any way new?
No, they don't claim to be new. There's nothing in the specification that talks about it new. We heard my opposing counsel say that all antennas have a coverage area. There is nothing claimed new technology in these patents. There was no new RFID components, no new computer components, and no application.
ATS says that there was a material fact in dispute as to whether at the time of the invention the RFID technology was well known, routine, or conventional.
And we would, of course, disagree, Your Honor, because all that is described in the patent specification. And I disagree with his description. I believe someone asked, Judge Stoll asked about if it's nascent. It wasn't nascent. It's rapidly developing. But it had been around for quite a long time. In fact, the patent, column 3 on
page 5. Refers you to?
It refers you to a great deal of explanatory material. It wouldn't be nascent if there was a great deal of explanatory material. There is nothing new being claimed in the patents. And the patents repeatedly refer to the idea being covered as this asset locating, tracking, and surveillance.
I agree with you that the patent suggests that maybe the individual components are conventional. But where does the patent or anything else in the record before the district court say that the combination of all those things together was not new or was conventional? Where is that stated? Well, because you might have a situation where all the elements themselves are conventional, but we need to also consider this claim. Most of these claims are directed to an RFID system, not a method.
Correct, but they all refer to, well, at least three of the patents in their preamble talk about a method for locating, tracking, and identifying information. And
they don't talk about a method. They say a system. Some of the claims are a method, but in patent law, we do distinguish between methods and systems. So, but again, my question was simply, in the specification or anywhere else in the evidence that the district court was looking at, where is there anything or any sort of admission that these elements in a combination was conventional?
The patent does describe in column 3 that a typical RFID system is in 089 patent on appendix page 53. It talks about a simple, and I'm on line 10 of column 3, a simple RFID system may be composed of three components, a scanner, a transponder, and a computer. And the transponder may be composed of an antenna, coil, and silicon chips. And the transponder may contain identifying information in its memory. Everything that is claimed in the patent was described right there. That is a typical RFID system. You always had a transponder, a reader, an antenna, and a computer. And those are the only components claimed in the patents. Again, just exemplary, if you look at claim 49 of the patent, of the 089 patent, the first one is a transponder affixed to the object, second, a reader, third, an antenna, and then a storage device and a processor. Storage device and processor being in the computer.
What about some of the dependent claims that talk about, give maybe more details about the antennas?
To begin, those aren't before the court. Those are not asserted by ATS below to confer any additional patentability on there. So I don't think it's properly before the court, but I also have not heard, we can talk about the one that you asked about.
No, that's all right. You don't need to ask. That doesn't provide additional detail on it.
Okay. I would assert that on the asserted claims that I have looked at from below, there is nothing additional beyond those components we just talked about. And this functionality could all have been done by a person holding a clipboard with a piece of paper and a pen. All that ATS has done is used an RFID reader to put the entry on the clipboard. We'll talk about entering the building as was discussed before. You can have a guard standing at the door marking in, Judge Moore came in, and then Judge Moore left.
That's troubled me about this case, I hear what you're saying, but to be honest with you, that's not going to persuade me.
Okay.
So I'm going to one of the things that's troubling me about this case is that most of the claims are directed to a system, as I mentioned, and there are specific hardware components. And I'm following Supreme Court case law, for example, Alice. And Alice, and cases like Alice, are talking about the idea that I have an idea, and now I'm going to say, okay, do it on a computer. These claims could be viewed differently. These claims could be viewed as, I have a system, it's for performing a certain function, and these are the electronic components of that system. And the question is, how far do we go with 101? Do we go so far that we're going to include telecommunication systems where there's different electronic components of those systems? So How far do we go here, and why is this? This isn't just a computer case. This has other elements besides a computer. So how do you respond to that?
I would say it doesn't really matter, Your Honor. This court has repeatedly held that taking known computer components and putting them together alone or doing an abstract idea on a computer or with other equipment doesn't matter. In the secured mail case, the one that we submitted a notice of supplemental authority on, in that case they talked about barcode readers and QR codes, and using scanners to then scan those in. And the court said, that doesn't matter. The patents weren't directed to a new method of creating those barcodes or QR codes, or it didn't have any technological improvement. And that's what Alice and Enfish have talked about, and its progeny have talked about, is what is the technological improvement that leads us to being a non-abstract idea?
It doesn't matter that this isn't just a computer. There's other components in the system. The fact that because it's electronic, so long as all those prior hardware components were conventional, it doesn't matter. Everything that is like that is going to be ineligible, so unless somehow the hardware is changed. That's your position?
No, I would say it depends on the outcome of Alice Step 2, because it could be that those hardware components were combined in an unconventional way. And then you would, under Alice Step 2, you would then have an eligibility. That's somewhat what happened in Talus. Right? In Talus, they had these sensors, but the sensors then were placed in different places, and they used a different reference point.
Talus was decided under Step 1, though.
But they also talked about, one of the things that talked about was that they used the known components in a different way. So I would say it wouldn't matter, because as the case law makes clear, Alice 1 leads over to Alice 2 very often. But I would say that if you are using computer components that are all existing, and they are doing an abstract idea that may have sped it up, then it would not be eligible unless those components were combined in an unconventional way. Well, those components can be computers or other.
My problem is sort of a logical hypothesis, and that is you have an RFID, and it's not under the patent asserted. You simply, under the RFID technology as it exists, it shows that an object is in a place. Okay? And the invention is, it moves into another place, and then we know that it's not in the first place. But RFID technology inherently is designed to show you where the object is, so that as long as you keep the scanner turned on, and the scanner tells you, oh, the object with the RFID is somewhere else, inherently it tells you that, does it not?
I would agree, Your Honor. And that is one of our points, is that there is no technological improvement here. They're using RFID technology for the exact purpose for which it was meant to be used.
Right.
They're just applying the known technology to the abstract idea of tracking objects. And as I said in our briefs, everything that's claimed could be done by a person taking inventory or keeping track of objects on a clipboard.
But I think what you're also necessarily saying is everything that's claimed could be done with existing RFID technology and was done with existing
RFID. Or barcodes. The patent talks about previous barcodes that did the same exact thing.
But there's a huge difference between that and using antennas with coverage areas, isn't there? I mean, isn't that a difference between both the secured mail case and what you're discussing now with Judge Wallach? Is these coverage areas, the patent makes a lot of the fact that you can have an enormous warehouse and separately locate these sensors in order to cover particular coverage areas, and that makes for a meaningful difference. I mean, yes, antennas may inherently have coverage areas, but they've recognized that combining them the way they have would enable the RFID system to track these objects a lot better. That's a lot different than just standing at the door and figuring out whether it comes in or goes out. That's locating it within the building specifically.
I would make 3 points, I guess. The first is, as Mr. Sokol admitted, all antennas have coverage areas. That was nothing new. That was existing technology.
Yes, but it's a big difference between utilizing that coverage area meaningfully and accounting for it and just standing at the door and checking things in and out.
I would agree. So my second point would be that I could have three people standing for all those coverage areas. And the most important point, though, is there is nothing in the claims, at least the representative claims.
That is crazy. Your argument I could have three people doing it, it's outrageous to me. Because then every automated system, even if, you know, assembly line, everything, you're going to say, well, this could all be done by people beforehand. Everything could be done by people beforehand, except sort of extreme supercomputer calculations.
But the third and the most important point is none of that is actually claimed in the patents. The patents don't talk
about... A car isn't ineligible because people can also walk to destinations.
I agree with that, but that wasn't my point, actually. What I'm saying is that what you're talking about, having it in different places, and they try to say that what they have is a specialized RFID system. None of that is actually claimed in the patents. If you looked at their arguments about, you know, RFID sensors don't have storage capacity, and why they disagreed with what the district court did, is they don't point to anything in the patents themselves that support their arguments. And that then goes to the other point as to whether or not it was improper to decide this on a 12B motion. It was entirely proper because everything that the district court did and all that we argue is based on what's in the patents. There was no inferences that should be drawn in their favor because they did not have a basis in the pleadings.
Doesn't this patent expressly disclose the use of multiple antennas spread out throughout a warehouse, picking up things as it moves or locating it within the warehouse?
The specification talks about that, yes, Your Honor.
How do you deal with the AMDOC and the idea that AMDOC says you can look to the specification to support whether claims are eligible or not?
You can look to determine what the abstract idea is, yes, but you still need to look at what is actually claimed to decide whether or not it claims patent-eligible subject matter. The fact that they may have talked about it, and because we also don't know if it was in prior art or if it was part of this, but they don't claim it.
One of the things that's hard here is that, you know, we go back and forth on this system. Is it directed to the idea of locating, identifying, or tracking at least one object, which is the preamble of the claim? Well, not including, you know, the word system. Or is it directed to an RFID system with these particular components arranged in a certain way? Because the specification does talk about how you want to have the antennas located here, here, and here. You want to have the antennas be of a certain type, of a certain polarity, of a certain location within respect to the transponders. Those kinds of details are in the specification. So to the extent that you're looking at the specification to try to determine whether this is directed to an abstract idea or not, how do you respond to that? Because the specification does have specific details.
It has specific details of things that were known at the time of the invention. Everything that is in there.
Everything, including where the antennas should be located.
Sure, RFID systems had multiple antennas.
Where is that in the record? All of the details about the antennas are located, that's conventional. I don't think that's in the record.
I don't know that it talks about prior to the invention that they were placed all over a warehouse. I agree, I don't think that's in there. But they do talk about having multiple transponders and receivers. Talks about, in column 3, they talk about that. But again, the TLI case talks about...
Can you show me where they talk about it? Can you show me where they talk about it?
Sure.
A single system that includes multiple antennas, multiple transmitters, tracking stuff.
Your Honor, I guess it does say a simple RFID system.
Yeah, it doesn't actually have any multi-component systems. At least I didn't see anything disclosed.
But I would also point you to the TLI case that said that the recitation of concrete, tangible components is insufficient to confer patent eligibility to an otherwise abstract idea, and that it must involve more than performance of well-understood, routine, conventional activities previously known. Again, they have not claimed that any of the technology or any of the hardware is new, and all they're doing is taking what was done manually, which they admit was done manually by police stations before that, and then applying RFID technology to that manual process.
Can I just ask, did the district court render ineligible all the claims of the patents at issue?
They used the representative claims and then found them to be ineligible. And the Coca-Cola had proposed 2 claims. ATS came back with used 4, and they did find all 4 of those to be patent ineligible.
And when you say ATS came back with 4, is there something somewhere that I can read where the parties agreed that these claims would bind all the other claims of the patent? Because the confusing thing for me is he makes arguments, both on appeal and below, that seem to me only to apply to dependent claims. And he wants me to read them into the independent claims, but he did make those arguments. I feel like he did separately argue the dependent claims. So I'm kind of wondering, is there somewhere where there's a stipulation that the representative claims would govern all the claims at issue in the patent?
I honestly cannot recall, Your Honor, but I would say I believe in their briefing, in their opposition brief, they said these are the 4 representative claims. I don't recall anything of them saying, no, we should consider these other dependent claims too because they have separate rationales for it.
Well, he thought the representative claims could read in certain things as a matter of claim construction if they don't, but if the dependent claims clearly do contain those limitations, should we really hold him to your whole patent's dead under a circumstance like that?
I think so, Your Honor. I think he had an obligation. If he believed that additional claims should have been included in those representative claims, he had an obligation to raise that with the court. He did not do so. He did not then preserve his right to say, well, I know I said those four, but these other two should have been considered too. I think it would be a waiver issue.
All right. Okay, you're over your time. Thank you very much, Mr. Kutnick. We will give Mr. Sokol 3 minutes of rebuttal time. That will even out the time since Mr. Kutnick went over.
Do you have a response to Judge Moore's question about arguing the dependent claims separately?
Your Honor, we would agree with the district court. There were representative claims, which were the independent claims, and only the independent claims. It certainly should be considered as part of the patent, the dependent claims, and they should be considered as part of the specification. But
I'm sorry, I'm confused by what you're arguing.
The representative claims were the four independent claims that are in the briefs.
Do the two additional claims that you propose as representative change the 101 analysis from the two that...
They do not. Okay. They do not, Your Honor. Those are the two claims that are representative, Judge Moore. Claim 1 of 766 and Claim 49 of the 49 patent. This case is not about adding a computer to the abstract idea. Rather, the claims are directed to an RFID system that provides visibility of transponders in coverage areas. Now, what my counsel on the other side said was that there's no new technology. We strongly disagree with that. Judge Wallach, you asked, very importantly, isn't this how RFID was always used? The answer is no. You said, isn't RFID always used to know where a tag is? The answer is no. That's the key, is that we're using the coverage areas. It's a useful tool, but we're using the coverage areas to then thereby maintain the visibility of the tags throughout the coverage areas. That was not done conventionally, and that is a critical dispute in this case. The fact that counsel has argued that there may be components that were known in...
You answered the question I was going to ask, yes. So.
The fact that counsel argues that there may be components that are conventional, but that can't be the case, that just because there are conventional components within a claim, that dooms the claim from a patentability point of view. Just like we've seen in Deere, where the rubber press was certainly conventional, but they applied a new formula to open that press and create rubber. Just like in Thales, where they used conventional inertial sensors, but still used a new mathematical algorithm to produce a different result. Here, we're using the coverage area to maintain the state of information.
What about the response that in these independent claims that you've asserted as the representative claims, their antenna is directed to a coverage area, but you've admitted that every antenna has a coverage area?
That's true, Your Honor, but not every RFID system maintains the state of the transponders within that coverage area. And that's one of the critical...
Where's that in the claim?
Sure, Your Honor. If we look at... If we look at Claim 1 of 766 patent as an example, you can see that the processor is coupled to the reader. The processor is configured to generate detection information. The detection information comprises first sighting and last sighting of the first transponder in the coverage area. And then that's used to determine whether it's dwelling. That is the visibility. That's the state information about the transponder. And that is a critical paradigm shift over what was done before. And by maintaining that information, we provide visibility to the tag throughout the coverage area, but then ultimately throughout the facility. One other thing, I think counsel referenced our patent at column 3.
So do you think the new thing, the combination of elements that you have put together and the novelty that flows from that combination, because each of the individual elements are certainly conventional, do you think the new thing is this utilizing this coverage area and taking multiple passes, you know, multiple checks? I mean, it seems like all the prior art systems disclosed in the background are, it comes in the door. Mm-hmm. Like it's a one-time check, and then there's no continuing coverage of the device.
You've hit the nail on the head, Judge Moore.
So that's what you think is new, is the ability to repeatedly ping it to find out its location, and therefore know where it is within the building.
Absolutely. Judge Moore. It is the utilization of the coverage area. And if we look at claims one of 766, it's about a temporal relationship and a spatial relationship. The spatial relationship being the coverage area, the temporal relationship being the fact that there are multiple reads being made within the coverage area, specifically recited, a first sighting and a last sighting. That tells you valuable information, whether it just entered the coverage area, whether it's dwelling in the coverage area, whether it's exited the coverage area, and that type of spatial information is critical. And I do think it is this utilization of the coverage area that has been, is critical.
All right. Well, your time is up. We thank both counsel for their argument, and this case is taken under submission.